You're listening to Eye on the Ball with Steve Rivera. This podcast is a Bustos Media production on The Voice. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Eye on the Ball. I'm Steve Rivera, and you're listening to 1030 The Voice. Hey, Tom. Good to see you, Tom.
It's good to be here, Steve.
We've had a couple of good shows here. You want to mess this up?
No, I don't.
Okay, so let's not mess it up.
Let's keep it going.
Keep it going. Today's show, we'll have about 6:15 with Coach Jay Campos of the Sabino High School, AD there. News came out today. He's going to be moving positions to the new high school out in Vail, Mica Mountain. I think it's Mica, M-I-C-A Mountain. And he's going to be joining the principal from Vail, Cienega. I'm not tuned in high school that much. Mr. Nimar Hassi. They'll be joining forces here in the next year. For school years, so that's cool. So I decided to have both of those guys on. I've talked to them a few times in their careers here while I've been in town. So they'll join me about 6:15 to 6:45-ish if we can get to maybe talk about some great high school players in the time they've been here. And then at 6:45, 6:46, I'm going to talk to my tax write-off, Mr. Matt Moreno, talk about today's press conference with Sean Miller. And I want to ask him, did anybody ask him what his biggest concerns on this team are? I know we talked about the starting lineups, how they might change, so a lot of different things, but I didn't hear that one. And maybe I missed it. I didn't watch all of it. And I didn't have a chance to go because of my other job. But that would have been my only one and only question. What are your biggest concerns going into, not this weekend, the rest of the season? Because I think that's the biggest team, you're losing the team playing hard, whatever, just to see what he thought he would say.
Well, and Steve, you would know better than I would. Do you think you would get an honest assessment, or would you get the what you want to hear answer?
I would probably get a mixture of both. He's very good at being honest when he needs to be. And I'm not saying he's trying to be dishonest. I'm just, he kind of doesn't answer the question a lot of the time, but he answers the question. But just not the specific question,
right?
So, I think we would, whether it's free throw shooting or whatever it would be, yes, but in a weird different way. You know, you kind of have to pick apart the answer. Well, he meant this, or try to say this, or whatever. It's like he said a week ago or so when he talked about Nico Mannion saying that he was leaving next year or this year. There was a reason for that. There just definitely was when he was trying to say that the transfer from Georgetown was coming in to be the point guard. So it was like, you're here, make the best of it. Nice knowing you. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And now that I say that, it sounds like the answer. I don't know. Because he's not coming back. You know that.
Right.
I mean, he's all but said, you're here and you're gone.
You think he's already mentally checked out?
No.
Is that part of the
Mannion?
Problem?
Mannion?
Yeah.
No. I still think there's only one reason that they're not running. They look great when they do run, in my opinion. I don't know if you feel that way, but they look great when they run. They're not running all the time. And I guess you don't run all the time. I get that. The other team is going to do what? Try to prevent you from running all the time?
Sure.
So if you run, but if you run 75%, 80% of the time, that's what you do. If that's your wheelhouse, why wouldn't you do it?
And if you have the horses.
And I, in my estimation, and he knows better about his team than I do, I still think he has the horses. Guys who can run up and down. Will they make mistakes? No question. Are they doing their mistakes in this situation? No question. So, what do you have to lose?
I always kind of, I smirk when people talk about college kids in any sport making mistakes.
That's
well,
what they do.
Of course they do.
In real life, even if they're not a student athlete, what's the number one reason why you come to... What's one of the top reasons you come to college?
Well, you want to get a degree.
But you have to learn
right.
to get that degree.
Right.
And in learning, you make mistakes.
Mistakes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny. Some of the coaches don't let the kids talk to the media because they're afraid of what they're going to say. Really? Come on.
Mm.
And guess what? You learn from that, don't you?
Sure.
You know, when you go to school, you went to college, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I did.
I learned how to do my own clothes, wash my own clothes, how to get up in the morning, go to class, do stuff that was for me, not my parents telling me to do this and do that. It's part of growing up, isn't it?
Yeah. Mom's not kicking your butt out of bed anymore. If you want to make that 8:30 class, you got to do it on your own.
And guess who's going to reflect on?
You.
Exactly. Welcome to college. Maybe the coaches should understand that's what it's about.
Yeah.
In my opinion, I could be totally wrong, but that's my opinion. And this is this show about opinions.
It is a show about opinions.
I just wanted to see, am I at the right place? Am I in the
right? You are.
Yes. So that's going to be the show. The coaches at 6:15, is about 6:45 if we can get through that. Matt Moreno at 6:45 to see what Sean said today in some of the things he said. And then just you and I, kid. Did you see, there's a few things. The Big Three. Did you ever watch The Big Three with the NBA guys, old NBA guys? And I say old because they're older, 35 and above probably.
The Big Three.
The half court. You have no idea what I'm talking about.
No.
Kind of like Jay-Z, I think, and these guys are Ice Cube, who are the commissioners, and Mike Bibby played in it. The Gilbert Arenas, Salim Stoudemire.
Definitely never saw this.
Yeah. They're going big time. They're going to let almost everybody in it. 22. They're going down to 22 age group. They're having 4-point plays. They play in the half court. It's pretty cool. You know, it's the older guys. Now they're going to have let younger guys in. And they're going to change the league. It should be fun. But I think it's going to kick out the older guys who can't compete with the younger guys.
Right.
You know, when you're still 22, 25, whatever, you can move better than you are when you're 35.
Sure.
You know, I can still move like I'm 35. If you believe that, I have a bridge somewhere.
Nice.
Because I don't even believe that. But that's kind of cool. And there was another thing I saw. I don't know if the Mets with their big deal with the... Oh, no. I know what I want to talk about. The Beckham giving money at the end of the game. Did you read about that?
No.
Giving cash to the kids at LSU after the victory?
No.
He gave cash, you know, for congratulating them that they won. Okay, so right after the game... It was very obvious he was doing it to the media there because they were seeing it. They were witnessing
right.
it. So I guess one of the media there said, so what's going on? Is that real money? One of the ADs from LSU said, no, it's just fake money. They're just having a good time and it's fake. Well, a day or two, today's 2 days later. I guess a day later, guess what they found out?
It's real money.
It's real money. Burrow says the one that was asked that. And he says, well, now that I'm no longer a student athlete, yeah, it was real money. It doesn't affect him.
Right.
Because he's gone.
But he just left a mess. Oh, my goodness. Why would you do that?
How stupid is that?
It is dumb. Especially if you care about that program.
And I'm talking about Beckham. That's what I'm talking about.
Right.
That's where it started.
But it's also dumb for Burrow to say anything, too.
No, but you're going to find out. Whether he said it, you're going to find out if
Someone
it was real.
But, no, that was really dumb. Why would you hand out cash?
Exactly. Exactly.
In a college locker room. In front of people.
In front of people.
Ugh.
It makes no sense. When I read that story yesterday, I said, how...
That's just dumb.
How dumb is that? And then they said, it was just fake money. I think, oh, okay, that's cool. And then you realize the dealer, no, it wasn't fake money. It was real money.
Oh, my God. That's why would you do that?
So now they have to get NCAA approval and SEC approval for whatever sanctions or whatever problems they're going to have.
Which... You know there will be.
There'll be something.
Oh,
yeah.
My goodness.
They'll be required. The kids will be required to pay it back or donate.
At least the only thing, though, Steve, the only thing that might save them is that you can point to one guy and go, he's the fool here. He's the one who did it.
Yeah.
But
he made it rain in the wrong way.
Oh.
Let's go to break. We got to get back to the coaches here. Here on 10:30 The Voice. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 10:30 The Voice. I'm your host, Steve Rivera. And now on the phone, I'm hoping we have Coach Campos and Coach Hasse. Coaches, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Steve?
Fine. Good to hear from you guys. Big, big news from you guys today. It's like you guys are breaking news in a good way. How did it feel to you guys today?
This is Nehmer Hasse. I felt real good. You know, we had a pretty extensive interview process for the assistant principal position and had a deep committee and 30 applicants. We wheeled it down to 10, and Mr. Jay Campos earned the job from day one.
And you guys have been friends for how long and competitors for how long?
Well, we've known each other since Niemer was at Saguaro as the head coach, and I was an assistant at Sabino. So I'm not sure the exact date, but I'll say right around probably 2001, right around that time period.
You guys were just young kids then.
We were young kids then.
And a lot of victories later. What Niemer, what did you see in Jay, Mr. Campos, Coach Campos, that you liked back then that he still holds now?
Well, he has a really focused vision. He gets the big picture of a high school. It's not all about one thing. You know, there's a lot of moving parts to putting together a comprehensive high school. So what I like about Jay is he's organized. He has a vision. He gets the big picture. He knows how to motivate people, deal with people, and grow people that maybe are average, and he can help them get better. That's what you know, if you see him as a coach, as an administrator, that's what he does a really good job with.
And Jay, what about Coach Hassie?
Well, you know, I've admired not only Niemer and the job he's done at Cienega, but the entire Vail District. The last 15 to 16 years, I've really been paying attention, having lived out in the Vail area. But the thing I admire about Niemer is the fact the way he brings people together and brings out the best in them and wants to see good for everybody. As a result, I think people really perform under his leadership, and I'm looking forward to being a part of that.
When do you guys officially start, or have you already? What's the situation?
We will open July of 2020. We're still under construction. We are giving an open house and tours this Saturday in the construction site just to show the design of the school. The community designed the, you know, we had a lot of buy-in from the community, and a lot of people from the community helped design the school. It's a really dynamic high school, innovative, and we will open in July with about 500 students, and then construction will continue a little bit. Sometime around October, November, we should finish the whole building, and then we can expand to about 1,100 students, and that's phase one. Mica Mountain is master planned to be a 2,000-student school, which will be a few years down the road. We have room to expand and build onto it, but it'll be a few years down the road as our Vail School District High School growth increases.
And Niemer, your position is going to be the same. You'll be the principal at the school, correct?
Correct. I am the principal, and Jay Campos is hired as the assistant principal over athletics and many other duties. And then we also have an athletic director.
So let me ask you, two guys who've coached football, who've played the sport, a number of years, what competitors love to compete? What drives you now?
I want to be the best at everything. What drives me, I'm just coaching a different team. I'm still coaching every day. And what drives me is, you know, I'm as a principal, I'm not afraid to say that I expect our culinary arts to be the best. We may not be the best right away, but we're going to strive to do that. I expect our fine arts to be a powerhouse. I expect girls soccer to compete and be good. And so all that said, I expect to be good in academics. And you know, we want to hire, the key is you can have a fancy, shiny building, but it's all about the people you hire. So I'm really excited about the staff that I'm putting together at Mica Mountain High School.
Yeah, Jay, what about you?
One of the things I found when I became an administrator is that I took a lot of pride in trying to get some of our other programs up to the level that we were at in football. And when I became in a position to be able to hire people and help people develop programs, I wanted what football had at our school at Sabino. So those kind of things motivate me to want to see everyone doing well, whether it be the arts, whether it be the sports, whether it be the academics. When you have a complete high school that is successful in all elements, then you have a place where kids are really going to get the skills they need to be lifelong contributors in society.
Yeah. And what about taking over, or not taking over, starting afresh with a new kind of a new toy? You got keys to the new car. How does that feel, and maybe the challenges that you'll see?
I think the challenges is just implementing all the procedures and policies and culture and mission statement and vision statement and living it and knowing what you want. You know, one thing I always do is I work backwards and say, okay, what do I want my students to be 10 years from now? and when they graduate and come back as alumni. And so I work back, and one of the things that we're doing at Micah Mountain is we're being really innovative with collaboration and character development and leadership, and we're implementing that into the school. I so many skills that I learned as a football player and as a football coach, just life skills, I think it is important to implement to every student. I want well-rounded students that can be employable when they graduate. And so we work backwards on that. And I don't work, the one thing is I don't do anything by myself. Everything is in a collaboration and a team. And so it's just involving the whole team to put this together, because there's no way I could do it by myself.
And the challenge for you, Jay?
Well, I have a lot to learn coming to the Vail School District. There's certain way they go about their business that, again, I admire, and I'm looking forward to learning about. So, you know, initially I'm just going to be someone that's taking it all in and not going to be adding a whole lot until I have a full understanding of what the expectations are and how they implement their climate and culture, and I'm looking forward to being a part of that. So, again, a lot of newness. I'm going to miss Sabino. There's a lot of great people over there. I'm thankful for the opportunity that TUSD gave me, as well as Sabino High School, the amazing students, parents, and faculty that I've had a chance to work with. But I'm looking forward to working in the Vail community. I know there's a lot of fantastic people there as well. So I'm in a learning phase. I'm almost like a new teacher coming in to a brand-new classroom, very similar in the sense that I just have a lot to learn. I'm looking forward to the challenge, and I'm definitely going to do the best job and work as hard as I can, like I've always done, but I'm looking forward to being a part of a great team.
And you guys are part of a growing community. I mean, who would have thought you'd have three high schools there now in 15 years ago or whatever years ago, and now it's kind of like the potential is out that way. I mean, I go out there and speak to the junior highs a little and some high schools, just a career day, and it's phenomenal, all the growth and potential, if you could talk about the potential.
Well, I've been in this community since the late 90s, early 2000s. I've moved into the community anyway. I came to Cienega in 01, and the growth is unbelievable. It continues. There's in the Rocky K area, just a stone's throw from Micah Mountain across the future road that they're putting in, 5,000 more homes. There's a bunch on the Houghton Corridor that are going in. Cienega area is growing. And what's nice about the planning committee in our community, they put together Micah Mountain as a school that can absorb some of that growth as we build phase two. It'll be down the road on phase two, but you never know. It might speed up, you know, within 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, there's just so many things going out east of Tucson. And I think you guys have been, I know you guys have been competitive a lot. And you moved to Cienega, and you guys have been fantastic with Nugent. So just the future is unbelievably bright over there.
Yeah, it's exciting. You know, Micah Mountain High School is an innovative school, and the way the community put it together. And the one thing to know is we're a school choice district, so our high school kids generally can pick and choose what high school they go to. So all the high schools are a little different. But the one thing that was overwhelming, the number one choice has been Cienega High School, mm-hmm. which is a full comprehensive high school, and that's exactly what we're building at Micah Mountain. And you know, excited to bring Jay on board with my, you know, as part of my staff and to be my assistant principal, because his knowledge and experience in growing a high school from A to Z, you know, the full comprehensive offering, everything for everybody, his expertise is going to be valuable.
Nehmer, I know you could tell me this. You're going to be honest with me. How much do you miss coaching?
Oh, I totally miss coaching. I love football. I miss it. But I'll tell you, I love being a principal. So this is the track I'm doing right now, and I'm committed to building Micah Mountain for the next 10 years, and then I'm going to reevaluate if I need to retire or keep going. But, you know, I miss football, but, you know, I'm coaching just a different group of people right now, and I get to work with all the kids. So it's good. But I do miss the Friday nights and the pressure and all that, for sure.
I'm sure your family is good to see you, happy to see you.
Well, my wife, Teresa, is a football girl. Her dad was a 30 years of coaching and administration. So she misses the football stuff too, but it's good. I'm on a different track, and I love being a principal.
Right. Did you guys compete a lot against each other? What was maybe your head to head if you did?
We competed a lot. I'll let Jay talk a little more on it, but in all the games we played, almost every one of them went down the last play. Even our first game was an overtime thriller, and they got us. And for the most part, Jay got my number, but I got him, I think, once.
Jay, is that true?
It's true. We had some fantastic games. They're always tough to beat. You know, Niemer did a good job of taking care of all facets of the game. I think he ended up getting me twice. I remember both of those vividly. But
it was twice. Yeah.
We had a lot of great competitions, and I think we gained a mutual respect for each other along the way because the preparation that went into is evident when you watch the game film in preparation, and of course, after the game was over. So, you know, it's been a long, long process. We know each other a long time. We've never worked together, so this will be a first in that aspect. But I think we're going to make a great team.
You guys have some time to stick around. I'd like to pick your brains on some of the best athletes you guys have seen and coached over the last 15, 20 years. True? Can you have time?
Sure.
Okay, we'll come back. We'll come back for the break and talk about the good old days with the guys. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm your host, Steve Rivera. In on the phone with me are Jay Campos and Niemer Hasse, both headed to Mica Mountain here in Vail in a few months. I wanted to pick your brain about some of the great athletes you guys have coached and coached against. Let's go with the coached against. Maybe just off the top of your head, maybe the top two or three each of you, because you guys have seen some of the best over the last 20 years, 25.
So you're talking just in general, all the players that we've ever faced?
Yes. Did you?
Go ahead. The three come to my mind right away. The first one is Christian Kirk. He was incredible. We saw a lot of outstanding football players, but he was by far the best one that we ever faced live.
And where was he at?
Scottsdale Saguaro. We played him, I think, three of the 4 years. He was on the varsity over there at Scottsdale Saguaro. He ended up going to Texas A&M, was the SEC Freshman of the Year in that conference. You know what kind of football they play in the SEC.
Sure.
And then from there, he went on to be a second-round draft pick for the Arizona Cardinals, where he's doing some really, really good things for them. Number two would be Kadeem Carey, who was just a game-changing back.
Yeah.
You know, things that he was able to do in the high school game, and even to a certain extent in the college game, I don't think we've seen that in a long time, at least in Tucson, in terms of what he was able to do. And then finally, Blake Martinez, who played at CDO when we played against him, and then from there went on to Stanford, and now he plays for the Green Bay Packers. So when you start talking about guys and what they look like in high school and eventually made it to the NFL, those players in high school look different than the other people that are on the field. And that was evident when those three stepped on the field that we played against them. So, you know what? We have a lot of really fantastic football players down here. I've been lucky enough, and I think Niemer has too, to coach and against and have those guys on our team as well. So that's been a fun part of the process.
So Jay, when you're prepping to face Kadeem, what do you think?
Well, you hope they don't give him the ball very much.
Knowing that they're going to give him the ball all the time.
Yeah, you can't really control that. So, you know, you just try to reduce what they do best with a player like that to the best of your ability and make them counter and make some adjustments. And if they have enough good adjustments to make, then, you know, chances are they're going to win the game. So that's kind of what it comes down to when you're strategizing and you play against an elite-level athlete.
Yeah, no question. You're right on Blake. And they played on the same team back in the day.
They did. Yeah, it's a pretty formidable team when they play together.
Nugent had them pretty much controlled in the Northwest, that's for sure.
Yep, no question about that. Yeah.
Coach Hasse, what about you?
Along with what Jay said, I mean, Kadeem Carey and Blake Martinez, you know, I've had some battles against both of them as a coach to them as players. And, you know, they both played in the NFC North. And so at the time when they were in high school, who knew who would have known they would have been in the pros? But, you know, they make you pull your hair out and tweak things like there's no tomorrow to try to deal with them. And, in fact, 1 year we had them beat. We were up by 10 in the semifinals with 3 minutes to go, and there's not a day I don't think about that game we lost in the last closing seconds. And I couldn't understand why Kadeem all of a sudden was gashing us on defense. But if you look at his career, it kind of shows that. There's another player that we played against a long time ago named Nick Wise from Sabino. That kid was special running back. That was hard to deal with, very much like Kadeem, a little bit smaller in frame, but he was pretty tough. And then I'm going to name a guy from Chaparral. We had so many battles with Chaparral and had them on the ropes so many times. A guy named Taylor Lewan, who is playing in the AFC Championship this weekend. He's a tackle for the Tennessee Titans, and we had to deal with him at Chaparral. He was a handful.
Were there guys that you said, there's no, you know, okay, we don't even really know about him, but he's good, that surprised the heck out of you and ended up playing in the league or somewhere special?
You know, I could think of a kid we had, Lucas Reed, who was Brooks Reed's younger brother, who was a JV player as a junior. Didn't play very much as a sophomore, hardly any minutes at all, but really had an incredible senior year. Ended up being an All-Arizona player, and had a great, better senior year than his brother did, believe it or not. And he went on to play for New Mexico, where he was a second-team freshman All-American, I believe, and eventually made it to the Broncos camp. So he kind of came out of nowhere, but you never know. Sometimes there's guys that just, they bloom late and they work hard and they have a lot of determination. So he definitely was one of those that fit in that category. I didn't see that coming, but we were very proud of what he did on the field.
Yeah, no question. What about with you guys, Coach? And I know it's like picking your favorite son or daughter, but maybe some of the players that you really enjoyed coaching, maybe who played out of their mind or just had some great talent.
At between my two main schools, Saguaro and Cienega, I could probably list a top 50, and all of them you're splitting hairs. What comes to mind, you know, Reggie Robertson at Saguaro High School is a pretty special football player. He had a broke some records and ended up playing at Cal and breaking the record for USC's 47-game win streak. And then Reggie Robertson got beat out by this one guy named Aaron Rodgers. And so he's a pretty special quarterback. Going forward in Cienega, I can name Brandon Lopez, really relevant kid that got Cienega on the map as a player. And, you know, long list of guys. Daniel Gonzalez played at the Navy. He was great. Edgar Poe at Army.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then another guy who's playing smaller college, but he was probably one of the best high school players I've ever coached, is Francisco DiCochea. Running backs, he's safety, never came off the field. Just an amazing football player.
And those are the great stories. I know I get to do some stuff with you guys with the awards and the Hall of Fame. Those stories are untold. You know, they're the guys who kind of the unsung guys that just have fantastic careers, and no one would really know about it.
Yeah, for me, there's a lot of great football players that came through Cienega and even Saguaro when I was there. And, you know, it's the list is endless. Tucson football has had some pretty good history in the past. And I just remember a time back in the day when we were younger coaches that every game was tough. You play a 5-5 team and it was a one score game. So, you know, that's the part I miss, that competing and game planning and trying to put it all together.
As the city got bigger, did that kind of dilute the talent, or did somebody, I could be wrong, it's just a question. How did it do as the city grew, how did the talent go?
Well, I think the biggest thing that changed, it used to be a time, like Niemer said, when you had 10 games on your schedule and you could plan on 8 or 9 of them. You know, if you don't have your ducks in a row, there's a chance you could get beat. But as time went on, I think open enrollment changed a lot of it. It used to be when you went to a high school, it's because you lived in that neighborhood and that's just the school you went to. But, you know, Arizona's about school choice, and people had a chance to go to the schools that maybe were better academically. Maybe they had a better sports program or fine arts program that they wanted to be a part of. And it created a scenario where there wasn't a whole lot of middle class, in my opinion, towards the end of my career, in football especially. You had a few good teams, and then you had not very many in the middle and quite a few teams that struggled. So it just changed part of it, and we just had to adapt and keep moving forward from there.
Right. What were your thoughts on South Point this year, one of the better teams that has come along in a while?
I thought, you know, Dennis did a great job over there with that program. They started building some really nice facilities and getting things going in the right direction. They had a lot of momentum, and they had some exceptional football players. I mean, I can't think of a time that I've been in Tucson where you have that collection of talent in one place. But it's more than just having the talent. You have to put them in the right places and coach them up and get them to believe in what they're doing. And I think those guys did a good job with that, and I give them all the respect in the world. They had a great run.
Well, both of you guys don't have Dennis to kick around anymore.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he's going to do in retirement. I'll have to give him a call and find out. Yeah,
I'm going to try to get him on the show, too.
Don't be surprised if he's back in a year.
I would assume so. Exactly. Like I say with you guys before the show started, you guys, you competitors need to find a way to compete. And I know, Niemer, that's what you said. You do it in a different way with the school and other programs and other things that you root for. But that juice has got to flow. Like you say, you miss it. And I don't blame you for it.
No, you know, just something that I want to reiterate as a principal. What drives me is I have, you know, taking your students and then your great teachers and your great staff and serving them every day. And I really mean that. Like, I get up and I want to be consistent and dependable to my staff and make sure I give them everything they need to be successful. Because, you know, the teachers and the coaches and even the front office people, you know, they bring that culture every day and that great customer service and that support to everybody involved at the school. So the principal's job is to serve them and make sure that, you know, we're leading by example, we're rolling up our sleeves and working as hard as everybody else.
Let me ask you both, just what would you each tell the younger version of you for advice now that we have maybe a minute or so?
I would say...
This is Jay, right? You're Jay?
Yeah, this is Jay. To enjoy the process and enjoy the moments. You know, I look back when I was a young coach, and there seemed to be... I felt like there was a lot of pressure to do well, so being had a great reputation. And even though we had been through a few coaches between Jeff Stern and myself, I still felt that pressure to be successful and to make sure the program did well under my watch. And I don't think I enjoyed the experiences with the students and the wins and all the things that we accomplished as much in the moment as I wish I would have, because I was worried about the next game or breaking down that next film or whatever it might be to keep the program on track. So my advice would be to work hard, be true to who you are, value the people that you work with and the students that you coach, but definitely take time to enjoy the moment.
Yeah, right. Coach Niemer?
Very much the same with what Jay said, you know, to have a process and enjoy the process, but also for me and my young self to trust yourself. You know, when I was younger, I probably was not, I was maybe came across confident, but inside I was probably just churning and worried and not sure I was doing, you know, the best I could. But, you know, looking back at it, I worked really hard. I had a process. I enjoyed the process for the most part. I really missed the process. You know, as far as a football coach, I have a process being a principal. But, you know, really just trust yourself. Because even if you mess up, you can always go back and learn from it.
Well, you guys have put yourself in that position using that advice, or, you know, wishing you had done some things, other things, but you guys are doing very well. Congratulations on your new venture here in a few months. Thanks for joining me. Had a fun.
Thank you, Steve.
All right, guys. Take care. Good luck.
Okay.
Hey, that was Niemer Hasse and Jay Campos headed to Micah Mountain here in a few months. They're doing well at their current positions at their respective schools. Let's come back on the other side here on 1030 The Voice. Hey, welcome back to Eye on the Ball here on 1030 The Voice. I'm your host, Steve Rivera. And now on the phone, I have my tax write-off, Matt Moreno of Go AZ Cats. How are you, Matt?
Doing good. How are you, Steve?
Fine, thank you. Did anybody, one and only question would have been to Sean is, what are his biggest concerns going forward? Not so much this weekend, but going forward, because I'm sure he has a plethora of them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that he would have answered that. There was a couple of questions today when I was, you know, staying in the back of the press conference and listening to the questions, seeing how he answered them, where I said, we talked about this before on your show. He didn't answer the question at all.
Right.
He did that a couple of times that I can remember where I said, no, that was not an answer to the question that was asked. But, yeah, I mean, he talked a little bit about potentially switching up the lineups, we'll see. I don't know, but yeah, it was an interesting press conference.
Let me ask you something. I watched bits and pieces of it. Do you think, honestly, that the change of the lineup will actually help this team?
I think my head says no.
Right.
I think everything else kind of says you should, and that's the next logical step. But I think covering his program for so long and just knowing kind of how he works, I don't think it's going to happen. He kind of walked it back a little bit after initially saying, yeah, I think so. I think I'm going to make some moves. He kind of walked it back a little bit and said, well, that kind of, you can have that conversation before any game or any week, because you know, we're always consistently trying to get the best out of our players and figure out the best combination of players to use. But right now, I'd say no. I think to me, one thing that he talked about that I noticed was him saying, you know, looking at the two halves. So I still think maybe he comes out with the same starting lineup, but to start the second half, maybe you see a different group than you would normally see. To me, that's maybe the baby step to eventually switching up the starting lineup. But I think right now he's still kind of evaluating things and figuring out what he wants to do. There have been some kind of whispers about some potential decisions in that way in terms of just maybe making some moves and who would be those guys that would get on the floor. But nothing concrete so far. And like I said, he kind of walked it back after initially saying, oh, yeah, I think I might, you know, make some changes.
I had Bruce Pascoe on the show, I think it's Tuesday, maybe it's Monday. And I said to him, don't you think it's kind of strange? And because Sean is a lover of the familiar. He does the same routine most of the time. And this is the first time in a long time, I think you even mentioned it when Bruce asked the question, about him going this deep in his lineup in terms of rotation, going this deep this long. Maybe because he doesn't know what he has yet, or hoping to get some life from deeper in the rotation. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, well, he talked about it a little bit today where he said there's not very much difference at a few positions from the guys who are starting and the guys who aren't.
And that's not
that
good.
Part of it, too.
I heard that, and I said that's not good.
If you listen to what he's actually saying, it's not good. But it probably is telling about, or it gives me some kind of insight into why he is going so deep, and there isn't a lot of separation, and he's trying some things out and saying, well, this guy's not, you know, that much worse than this guy who's playing a lot more, so let's see what he can do. And so we'll see what happens. I know he kind of talked about that a little bit today where he got it in there a little bit. You have to listen kind of very intently when you're listening to Sean Miller. And he kind of said, well, you know, sometimes maybe it's better to play nine guys or eight guys. So
yeah.
Mm-hmm. There is that sense that could be the next move too, is that he moves on to, you know, start to shrink down that rotation a little bit, which is what we expect from a Sean Miller team. I don't think if you paid attention to what he's been doing, it's not going to be a surprise if he ends up, you know, tighten up that rotation.
That said, let me say this, and I don't like single on anybody, but Dylan Smith has not played well recently. He had some moments earlier in the preseason, and if you have 10 guys on this roster that are playing consistently, where does he fit in the roster? 8, 9, 10, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4. Where does he fit?
To me, he's an 8 or 9 guy.
Exactly.
All things considered, and to me, the question I would ask is, what are you really losing if you send him to the bench? I still think he can give you what he gives you as a starter coming off the bench. If you give him similar minutes, and even if you don't give him as many minutes, I think he could still, his production game in and game out, I think could be very similar if he's coming off the bench or starting. And so to me, I don't see a reason why you shouldn't try someone else there. Maybe it's the spark you need. Maybe, you know, getting someone like Jamal Baker in there, or switching up the lineup and going a little bit smaller and, you know, moving some pieces around and, you know, moving Zeke to the five and maybe getting some other pieces in there is a better solution than what Dylan Smith is giving you right now.
I'll make this analogy. I don't talk about ex-girlfriends because they're gone. They're come and gone, and they're gone. Do they miss Debonair?
I think in some ways. Obviously, it feels like we've had that conversation before where some of the comments that he made, Sean Miller made at one point, were kind of directed at him a little bit in terms of taking bad shots. But I think they do miss his kind of spark that he created and his playmaking ability. And if you remember last year, I think it was against Oregon State. He was the one who saved the game.
Right.
So they had someone who could make a play at the last second. And so I do think there are some elements of his game that are missing on the floor. But obviously, we don't know the whole story about what went on behind the scenes and why a player like that is no longer around. I think if you see the full picture, maybe you say, well, you know, if he was causing disruption, then it's better to not have him
right
with what he could bring. But I think on the floor, they are missing kind of that spark, that guy that can ignite them at any given time right now.
And he's not coming back, so I just want to throw that out there. So if I paid you $3 million a year, what changes would you make?
I think any that are willing to make my team better, whether that's playing more zone, whether that's figuring out different things. But to me, I do kind of like the idea of going a little bit small. That's, to me, your only option right now. I don't think anybody else has really proven that they're able to move into the starting lineup. I think it's more about guys that you need to move out as opposed to guys that are playing well enough to move in. But I don't mind playing Zeke at the five and moving someone like Stone Gettings to the four.
I agree.
I think Jamal Baker has done enough to warrant getting some time as a starter if he's going to be just a straight swap for Dylan Smith. Obviously, he plays a little bit more point guard, but he's someone who's very capable of playing the shooting guard position, and that's kind of what he was brought in to do. And I think those are some of the moves I would look at making. And I think the thing we do know is that you don't want to take Zeke Nagy, Josh Green, or Nico Mannion off the floor very much. And that's we know those are the guys that are carrying this team right now. And so you have to move the pieces around them. But I don't know that, again, Dylan Smith, and I know Chase Jeter, to a lot of fans, but to me as well, is just those two guys are not showing you enough that to warrant continuing to keep them in the starting lineup. If you feel like you need some kind of spark, which this team feels like it does right now, get some other guys in there. And like he said, using his own words, that some of those guys, there's just not a lot of separation between in terms of just talent level and the production they can give.
Yeah, and that's not good. Let me say, I'm sure you see this on the on your message boards at your place, and I see it on Facebook, so I'm sure it's kind of consistent with their comments. People believe that it's still a young team, there's a lot of work with, yada, yada. I think that's a bunch of malarkey. I'm trying to find a safe word there. Because these kids know how to play. They're very good at what they do. So the youth stuff is already a bad excuse because they've already played almost 15 games, 16 games, whatever. Now it's just finding them trying to play the right way. Would you agree with me?
Yeah, I think it's that. I think it's trying to find out how they play well together. I wrote about this earlier this week. To me, you're starting to see kind of not necessarily the true colors, but the true talent level, I think, of a lot of guys. Some of those deficiencies that were maybe not showing up as much when they're playing teams like Omaha or, you know, some of those other teams earlier in the schedule, when you start to play some good teams, some teams that match up a little better talent-wise, I think the true talent of a lot of these players, a lot of their deficiencies that maybe were getting covered up are starting to show up now. And it's trying to figure out how to work around that and figure out, okay, this is who they truly are as players, and let's see how they can kind of fit together now when you're going up against some better competition.
Yeah, so what was his – I watched portions of it. He was good again. How would you describe his demeanor?
It was interesting. It was very somber. I don't remember the last time he just felt that kind of – I don't know if that's the right word, but just kind of down. It's been a while since I can remember.
Well, there's two years ago he was down when he said he couldn't coach the guys.
Yeah, there was that. And then he kind of picked up when he kind of started criticizing his own team and kind of joked about blocking out on free throws. And he said, if I could trade players, I would. If I could cut players, I would. But I can't do that. And so my only kind of course of action right now is to say, can you please just put your hands up and maybe get in front of a guy? He did that famous Sean Miller sarcasm, but it was what he said last week when I'm joking, but I'm not joking.
Right.
That was kind of the same vibe I got from where he was kind of trying to joke about it. And can you guys please, you know, just step in and block out so we can get a rebound? But he really means it. And I think that was kind of the only time he kind of differentiated from that tone that he used for the first, at least, you know, 12 minutes of the press conference.
Yeah. Did he start on time?
A little bit late.
A little bit late because he went to 12:30, so I figured it was less than a half hour. A lot of questions, a lot of different questions. I don't know. I think this weekend we'll fix a few things, although both games are going to be tougher than we think.
Oh, absolutely. I think you mentioned that. I think that's where you got a true sense of, hey, this is really him. This is not coach speak. This is not Sean Miller with a filter. When he said this is going to be an important week to see where we're at in terms of rebounding, are the things that I'm talking about in coaching this week really sinking in with these guys, or am I going to have to do something else to really shake things up? Because to me, I got that sense, and he kind of put it out there that, hey, this is an important weekend for us to see where we're at as a team, and I think that's the case for Arizona right now.
Let me say something. On Sunday, I said they can't afford to lose this game, and they lost. There's no way they can afford to lose one of these two games.
No, and I think we talked about it on the radio show where I think losses are going to be less important during this conference season, but I don't think we're thinking of Oregon State when we're envisioning, you know, the losses they're going to have. But I think you don't want that. You have to earn at least a split this week, but you definitely need to beat Utah, and then you take your chances against the ranked team in Colorado. But if you're able to get two wins, I think it gets everyone going in the right direction again. Gets the fan base at least a little bit more positive and gets the team a little bit more positive. But it's definitely an important week. And if they end up 0-2 at the end of this week, I think we're having a different conversation.
Oh, man.
And talking about, you know, what's going to be next for the future of this program and getting towards that road a little bit more.
Yeah, it's funny. I can't remember the last time I've heard anybody, including yourself, saying they better watch about splitting this weekend at home. No one ever talks about doing that at home. I mean, last year they lost a bunch. I don't remember what the streak was of them losing, but this team is much better than it was last year. And if they lose two, man, imagine the thoughts going through the people in that arena and on the team.
I think the thing that the Oregon trip showed is that there's something a little bit deeper going on than just kind of they've been playing good teams, losing to good teams, and the Oregon State game especially, but even not being able to close out Oregon, I think, is not a good sign for this team and kind of shows that there's a little bit something deeper going on than maybe just them playing good teams and not beating those good teams.
Well, when the NCAA was calling, we said, as the basketball turns, guess what? It's turning again here at the soap opera. Not a big soap opera, but it is. Hey, Matt, thanks. We'll see you tomorrow at the game.
Absolutely.
All right, thanks so much. Well, Tom, another show done. Good show today.
And done well, Steve.
Thank you. I've got a streak of three. We'll see if I can pull it off of four for four tomorrow.
Four for four.
Four for four.
Let's do it.
We'll see you tomorrow, Tom. Thank you.